and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, the Kodiak Island Borough School District will not close a school to balance next school year's budget. Instead, the district's Board of Education has decided to make $2.7 million worth of cuts to staff and school programs.
We're trading off those absolutely fundamental responsibilities of our community against each other. I mean, we're down to, do we hire nurses or do we maintain buildings?
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at kodiakhealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
Our first story this week comes from our colleagues at KNBA. There will now be more time to speak out on the future of the Federal Subsistence Board, which has authority over hunting and fishing on federal public lands. The U.S. Interior Department has extended the deadline for public comment until March 30th. KNBA reports the announcement comes as hundreds of Alaskans rushed to meet the original February 13th deadline to weigh in on the U.S. Interior Department's review of its subsistence management program. A Safari Club International petition is at the heart of the debate. The National Sport Hunting and Fishing Group calls for changes, which rural subsistence users say threatens their legal right to hunt, fish, and provide for their families. As of Monday, an Interior Department spokesman said it had received more than 430 comments, with more expected throughout this week. When the Interior Department gave notice of its review on December 15th, Native organizations, including the Alaska Federation of Natives, mobilized quickly, but the announcement sparked frustrations over the limited time allowed for comment, only 60 days. Joe Nelson, co-chair of AFN, says the overflow crowd at last week's public hearing in Anchorage showed why more time is needed.
This is a big deal, you know. It's core to our identity as a people, our way of life.
Nelson says he is pleased with the decision to push back the deadline, that it demonstrates the administration is listening and willing to listen more. Joe Williams, the tribal president of Saxman, a predominantly Native community outside of Ketchikan, says most Alaska tribes are small with limited staff. Williams says with so much to consider, tribes need more time to gather input.
If I don't get it done, it doesn't get done. That's just the way it is. And there are a lot of tribes, federally recognized tribes, in Alaska, which there are 229 federally recognized tribes that are in the same situation that I am.
Safari Club supporters say the proposals are not anti-subsistence or anti-rural priority, but focused on protecting wildlife and reining in what it calls federal overreach. The sport hunting and fishing group's main push is to do away with five public seats on the Federal Subsistence Board and return to its original structure, made up of five federal agency heads who would be required to defer to state wildlife managers. It also wants rural advisory council members to be elected rather than appointed. Opponents say the proposals would take away the voice of those who live closest to the resources and depend upon them for survival. Despite widespread disagreement over the issues, John Sturgeon, a longtime Safari Club policy advocate, agrees that the extension was needed. He says more time is needed to explain the group's proposals, which he says are misunderstood.
We are not trying to get rid of the Federal Subsistence Board or trying to get rid of subsistence. So hopefully a little more time, maybe we can get the word out a little bit better.
The Interior Department is also holding two statewide tribal consultation meetings next month to discuss the federal subsistence review. These had already been scheduled. The Interior Department says its review is in the fact-finding stage. No changes will occur unless the secretaries for the Interior and Agriculture Departments, after weighing public input, decide to set a rulemaking process in motion. Now there are an additional 45 days to give comments. In other news, Pacific cod fishermen in the Kodiak area and South Alaska Peninsula can now catch nearly 8 million pounds of fish during the current state-managed fishery. That's after the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced an updated quota on February 5th in the middle of the 2026 season. The guideline harvest level or quota went from 5.3 million pounds of cod ahead of the Kodiak area season opener to 7.9 million pounds on February 5th. That's an almost 50% increase in the amount of fish that can be caught this season, which is split evenly between pot and jig fishermen. Updated quotas in state waters follow the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's review of updated Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod stock assessments during the opening days of the council's meeting last week. The newest stock assessment, which is in part based on data collected during the biennial bottom trawl survey in the Gulf of Alaska last summer, shows Pacific cod stocks are 37% larger than what was projected in last year's assessment. This year's Pacific cod pot gear season in state waters in the Kodiak area opened on January 27th. The season is expected to last less than a month, but jig gear fishermen will likely take longer to reach their full harvest. The state of Alaska is moving forward with a multi-year project to repave and improve the only road connecting the city of Kodiak to Benny Benson State Airport. Earlier this month, the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities started accepting bids for a multi-million dollar project to resurface 4.7 miles of Razanoff Drive heading south of the Kodiak Marketplace. Work includes drainage repairs, structural improvements, as well as lighting and signals, and is expected to wrap up by the end of next year. The department estimates the resurfacing will cost between $10 and $20 million to be paid for by the federal government. The project is separate from another Razanoff Road project that is focused on ADA improvements, which is still in the design phase. Bids are due by February 24th, while the start of the work is dependent on the successful bidder. Also on Razanoff Drive near Cope Street, the department launched an AI pedestrian lighting pilot project on February 6th. According to a DOT press release, the new Kodiak Crosswalk light is the first of its kind in Alaska and is part of the state's test of pedestrian safety technology that could be used in other communities. In other news, Kodiak's $24 million fire station is open for business. City firefighters and emergency services began responding to calls from the new firehouse earlier this month. KMXT took a tour of the shiny new facility and has this report.
And talking to him, you know, obviously.
After decades of being housed in an outdated, deteriorating firehouse, city firefighters are now living and operating out of a brand new building.
It just feels more professional.
Rich Gonzalez is the fire chief for the city fire department.
You can see it, and the guys are just excited to come to work. You know, it feels like a firehouse is what they're telling me.
He took over the department last summer, months after longtime Kodiak firefighter Frank Dorner retired from the chief job. Gonzalez remembers spending time in the firehouse on Lower Mill Bay Road from when he was a Kodiak firefighter 25 years ago. It wasn't great then, either.
And one of the biggest differences right now is we have windows. Over there,
no windows.
It was like being in a dungeon. So it was not only, you know, were you tired, it was also very depressing.
The multi-million dollar building has three levels, including roof access for rappel training, five dorm-style bunk rooms with plush mattresses, a well-equipped modern kitchen, and several showers, including one specifically for decontamination.
So if we get back, guys have some kind of, you know, contaminant on their gear or something, we can just hose them off here, and then they can come in here, leave their gear out here, and they can shower in here.
The fire station has been built with efficiency in mind. From the way the garage bay doors open to the exhaust system that ventilates the building, Gonzalez says many of the new features save firefighters time when they are responding to an emergency call.
We have five different bays here, and the way it's set up is we have our first due medic right here. As soon as you come out of the doors, the guys come out of their sleeping quarters, they're right into the ambulance.
Last month alone, the city fire department responded to 90 calls for service, mostly for medical assistance.
And so the doors are automatic. I mean, you know, you hit the button, they open up. It's like literally 10 seconds, I think, and they're open.
The old fire station has garage-style doors that require at least one firefighter to manually open and close them each time. So the new ones could literally save time and lives. City Fire Department staffing is looking good, too. Gonzalez says he expects to fill every firefighter position by this summer. That's enough to meet national staffing standards with five responders on each shift. All 10 firefighters are also trained as emergency medical technicians. He says the City Fire Department has not been fully staffed in roughly a decade.
And then now we're walking into what we call the living quarters for the firefighters.
These are apartments.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how much did this fancy firehouse cost? About $24 million, though the city is only paying for 10% of that. Federal and state money is paying for the rest.
I mean, a lot of people jumped through a lot of hoops to make this happen, and we're extremely grateful that it finally came to fruition.
Gonzalez says former fire chiefs, city officials, state legislators, and others contributed. Many of them will be recognized during a community event this weekend. The fire station is hosting a public grand opening beginning at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 14th. And as for the old firehouse on Lower Mill Bay Road, the Kodiak City Council has not decided what to do with it yet. And our final story for this week, the Kodiak Island Borough School District will not close a school to balance next school year's budget. Instead, the district's Board of Education has decided to make $2.7 million worth of cuts to staff and school programs. KMXT has more. The board made its decision unanimously Monday night during a special meeting. It comes after 2 months of school board meetings, dozens of hours of public discussion, and hundreds of comments given via surveys and in person. Board President Kerry Iron says the board heard over and over about choosing stability for the school district going forward. But the board also heard some in the community say they wanted deeper cuts now.
Let's just pull the Band-Aid off. Just do it and cut as deep as you need to and get it done. And I think I have struggled a lot with that myself.
Board member Duncan Fields highlighted what he felt were accomplishments from this budget process.
We went from what we felt was a $7 million deficit to a $5 million deficit to a $2.7 million deficit. We accomplished that change. We looked at how to balance cuts. We've cut almost the same amount from administration as we did from the classroom.
The final budget cuts administrative positions such as the human resources director, several teachers' aides, and counseling and mental health support services. There is also a separate group of contingency cuts being considered that total roughly $1 million. They are a backup for the board in case they overestimated a revenue projection or don't get the full local contribution from the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly. The cuts include eliminating a school nurse, the auditorium director, and reducing the school district's share of the community pool costs. Board member Mike Litzo says he's concerned about the importance those positions and programs play in the community.
We're trading off those absolutely fundamental responsibilities of our community against each other. I mean, we're down to, do we hire nurses or do we maintain buildings? The depth of need just couldn't be greater.
Irons, the board president, told KMXT via email that the contingency cuts are available in case the board needs them, but there's no guarantees which cuts, if any, will be made from the list. Looking beyond next year's budget, Irons wants the community to be more involved sooner.
What we really need is a plan ahead, a plan to move forward. And to me, having a plan for this next fiscal year, but then moving forward with a plan that includes more time and more opportunities for community input.
Board members agreed to establish a budget advisory committee of community members to provide direct input to the board with the aim of starting up in March. Iron says the details are pending and the board will release more information on the budget advisory committee later this month. The budget process also includes planning ahead for the 2027-2028 school year when at least one school closure is likely. The KIBSD school board's next regular meeting is scheduled for Monday, February 16th. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Happy Valentine's Day, and thanks for tuning in.